Okay, I want to start today with a really specific image. I want you to just summon it in your mind.
Okay.
It's the mid-1990s. The setting is Milan, maybe Paris. The lights go down, that bass starts thumping, and out walks Naomi Campbell.
The walk.
The walk, that exact prowling, hip-swaying strut that, you know, it didn't just sell clothes, it defined a whole era. When you think of her, you think power.
Untamable power.
Yeah.
She is the boss of any room she walks into. The supermodel.
Absolutely. An empire unto herself, the face of Versace, the icon.
Right.
Now hold that image, and I want you to do a hard cut. Just wipe the runway away.
Okay.
Replace it with a gray, rainy Tuesday afternoon in Streatham, South London, maybe around 1978. And there's this little girl, 7 or 8 years old. She's wearing a modest skirt, holding a heavy book bag, and she is walking up to a complete stranger's front door to talk about Armageddon.
That is a jarring split screen.
It feels like we're talking about two completely different people, right?
Two different species almost.
But the deep diver going on today is going to argue that these two worlds, they aren't opposites at all. In
Yeah.
fact, you don't get the supermodel without the little girl on the doorstep.
That's the whole premise.
We are digging into this fascinating piece from Christian Culture News. It's titled Naomi Campbell Breaking Free from Her Mother's Faith.
And look, I know what you might be thinking,
Right.
that this is just another celebrity biography, some gossip column thing. It's not.
No, this is not about who she dated or what phone she might have thrown.
Right. What makes this so compelling is that it's really a case study in the psychology of upbringing. It's about, transferable skills, but from the most unlikely place imaginable. We're looking at how a really strict, high-control religious environment, in this case, the Jehovah's Witnesses, inadvertently built the perfect toolkit for surviving the most superficial industry on Earth.
It's the story of how her mother tried to build a fortress to keep the world out.
And Naomi used the bricks from that same fortress to build her runway.
That's the central tension right there, the intention of the parent versus the application by the child.
Exactly.
So let's start with the architect of this whole thing. Naomi's mother, Valerie Morris Campbell, the source makes it crystal clear. You cannot get Naomi without first understanding Valerie.
Oh, no, you can't. And you have to understand the context Valerie was in. The source paints a really vivid picture of London in the 1970s.
Right.
Valerie's a modern dancer, she's a single mother, and she's raising a mixed-race child. And 70s London, I mean, this was not some multicultural
Not
paradise.
at all.
The National Front was active, racism was just overt, it was in your face. It was a tough place to be a black woman raising a daughter by herself.
So when Valerie converts to the Jehovah's Witness faith, the source really emphasizes we shouldn't see this as just a spiritual decision in a vacuum.
No, it was practical. It wasn't just about finding God. It was a survival
The
strategy.
survival strategy.
Yeah, the article uses this one very specific word, armor. Valerie looked at the world around her, a world that was hostile and chaotic. And she needed a framework, something that provided absolute certainty. She needed a shield for her daughter.
And being a Jehovah's Witness is not a casual thing. It's not a show up on Christmas situation.
Far from it. It's what a sociologist might call a high-demand group. It dictates your friends, what you read, how you dress, how you view the world. And for Valerie, that structure wasn't restrictive. It was protective.
Okay.
She believed that if she could instill these, rigid codes of conduct, discipline, cleanliness, moral clarity, she was basically building a wall between Naomi and the toxicity outside.
It's interesting because from the outside, you hear strict religion and you immediately think repression, stifling. But you're saying Valerie saw it as safety.
Precisely. The source argues she believed spiritual hygiene was the prerequisite for physical safety. If Naomi followed the rules of the truth, that's what witnesses call their faith, she would be insulated.
A controlled environment in an uncontrolled world.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get into the mechanics of that environment. Because I think a lot of us, you know, we know Jehovah's Witnesses as the people who knock on doors, but we don't really know what the day-to-day looks like for a child.
It's incredibly regimented.
Yeah.
The source talks about a childhood that just revolves around the Kingdom Hall, multiple meetings a week.
Right.
And these are study sessions. You're analyzing texts, you're preparing answers, you're sitting still for hours. It's like an intellectual boot camp in a very specific theology.
And then, of course, there's the field service. The ministry.
The door-to-door work.
Yeah.
And this right here is where the source makes its most fascinating point. This is the unexpected training ground.
Yeah, I was trying to wrap my head around this. How does handing out copies of the Watchtower magazine prepare you for a Vogue cover shoot?
Okay, think about the interaction itself. Just strip away the religion for a second and look at the action. You're a child. You walk up to an adult stranger's house. You have to knock on their door, invade their privacy, look them in the eye, and present a message that statistically they do not want to hear.
And you're probably going to get the door slammed in your face.
Or yelled at. Yeah. Or mocked.
So it's sales training. It's the most brutal sales training imaginable.
It is cold calling 101, but the stakes feel, you know, eternal.
Right.
And the source points out that this forced Naomi from a really young age to decouple her sense of self-worth from immediate rejection.
Oh.
When someone slammed the door, she was taught they aren't rejecting her, Naomi. They're rejecting the message, or they're just blinded by the world.
I see exactly where this is going. So you fast forward 10 years. She's 15, 16. She walks into a casting call.
Yep.
The casting director gives her a once-over and just says, no, not for us. Next.
And for any normal teenager, that would destroy you. You just crumble. You think, I'm not pretty enough. I'm worthless.
But for Naomi.
She's been told no by grown adults since she was 7. She's developed a callus over that part of her ego.
That is such a crucial insight. The resilience wasn't born on the runway. It was born on the front porches of South London.
Exactly. She learned persistence. She learned that no isn't a wall. It's just a data point. And there's the presentation aspect, too.
Oh, right.
Witnesses are known for being immaculately turned out.
Mm-hmm.
You represent the kingdom. You don't show up to a meeting in dirty sweatpants.
Right. It's always Sunday best.
So that idea that your physical presentation is a direct reflection of your inner discipline, that was hard-coded into her way before she ever saw a designer dress.
So she has the discipline, the thick skin, the presentation skills, but then the collision happens. We have to talk about the clash.
Oh, yeah.
Because let's be honest, the fashion industry of the 80s or 90s is basically the Babylon her mother was warning her about.
It is the literal definition of the world in witness theology.
It's vanity. It's sexuality. It's materialism on an epic scale.
It's everything the faith stands against. And the source breaks this down really well. On one side, you have the Kingdom Hall. Humility, modesty, community over self.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other, you have the supermodel era. Hyper-individualism, exhibitionism, and worshiping the self. Right now.
They are completely opposed value systems. You really can't serve both.
No. And this brings us to the critical decision point. The source brings up a detail that you might miss if you don't know the religion. Naomi never got baptized.
Now, for a lot of listeners, baptism is something that happens when you're a baby. You don't have a choice. But that's not the case here, is it?
No. And that is a massive, massive distinction. In the Jehovah's Witness faith, baptism is an informed adult decision. It's like a binding contract with the organization.
A contract.
A public declaration that you are all in. And once you're baptized, the rules apply with full force. If you break them by living a worldly lifestyle, for example, you could be disfellowshipped.
Which is being shunned.
Completely cut off. Your family can't even speak to you. It's social death within that community. So by not getting baptized, Naomi was doing something very strategic. The source suggests she was consciously keeping the door open.
She respected it, but she wouldn't sign the contract.
Exactly. She didn't want to lock herself in, which shows incredible foresight for someone so young.
It really does.
And the article notes this wasn't just, you know, teenage rebellion. It wasn't I want to go party. It was intellectual. The fashion world, with all its flaws, is incredibly diverse. She's meeting designers, photographers, artists from every culture imaginable.
And that exposure just pops the bubble.
It bursts wide open. The witness worldview depends on the idea that the outside world is just this miserable, scary place. But Naomi went out there and found genius, passion, creativity, success.
And she started asking questions the doctrine couldn't answer.
Right. So she steps away. She becomes the Naomi Campbell. But here's the part that I found really surprising in the source material.
Okay.
Usually when you hear stories about people leaving these kinds of high control groups, the narrative is about trauma. It's I escaped a cult or I'm recovering.
Hmm. But Naomi's take is different.
Very different.
Right.
She doesn't speak with bitterness at all. She speaks with gratitude.
That seems almost contradictory, doesn't it? Thank you for the strict rules that I immediately went and broke.
It does. Until you look at what she actually kept. She views it as a successful transfer of tools.
A transfer of tools.
She left the theology in the dust. She's not knocking on doors anymore, but she kept the methodology.
The methodology being?
The work ethic. the discipline, that sense of us against the world, the ability to just endure. I mean, okay, she's famous for not being punctual, so maybe not that part.
Right, but the core stuff, the resilience.
Yeah, the resilience. And there's a really powerful point in the text about intersectionality here. The idea that the faith gave her a sense of worth that specifically protected her against racism.
Let's unpack that, because that's a huge claim.
It's profound. You have to remember the 80s and 90s fashion world. Black models were tokenized.
Mm-hmm.
They were treated like exotic accessories. The industry was constantly trying to tell Naomi what she was.
You're the black model. You're the savage beauty.
Exactly. You're the flavor of the month. But because of her upbringing, she arrived on that scene with her identity already fully formed.
How so?
The Jehovah's Witness faith teaches that your dignity comes from God, not from man. It teaches that all people, all nations are equal in God's eyes. So she didn't need the fashion industry to validate her humanity.
She didn't need their approval.
She already had what the source calls an internal locus of worth. So when a casting director tried to diminish her, it bounced off that armor her mother had built. She knew who she was before she walked in the room.
That is such a powerful nuance. You can reject a religion's rules, but still benefit from its psychological framework. You can take the steel, but leave the cage.
You raid the toolbox before you burn the house down. That's it.
And she's not the only one. The article zooms out here to show this is kind of a pattern. This isn't just a Naomi thing.
Not at all. It's a very common archetype. The preacher's kid who becomes a superstar.
They list a few big ones. Katy Perry comes to mind first.
Oh, Katy Perry's the classic example. Raised by traveling Pentecostal ministers. No secular music in the house. They weren't even allowed to say deviled eggs because it had the word devil in it.
Are you serious?
Seriously. And she goes from gospel music to being one of the biggest pop stars on the planet. But if you watch her, she has that same performance energy. The ability to command a crowd she learned in church. She just aimed it at a different audience.
And then someone like Justin Bieber.
A more chaotic journey, for sure, but yes. He's constantly wrestling with it. The rebellion, then the recommitment to faith, then rebellion again. It just shows you never really leave that kind of upbringing.
That's always the reference point.
It's the magnetic north, even when you're sailing south.
And Madonna, the article mentions her.
The ultimate Catholic rebel. Her entire career is basically a dialogue with her upbringing. She uses the iconography, the crosses, the saints, sin, redemption, to critique the church. She's not ignoring her past. She's using it as raw material for her art.
It's like they're all still speaking the language of their childhood. They're just using it to say different things.
That's a beautiful way to put it, yeah.
And then the article uses Denzel Washington as a kind of counterexample.
Right, to show that leaving isn't the only outcome. Denzel kept the faith. He integrated it. But the common thread for all of them, Naomi included, is that the foundation is never irrelevant. You either build your house on it or you build it in reaction to it. You don't just forget it.
It's in the concrete.
It is.
I want to move to the final section because this is where I think the writer lands on something really deep. It's what I'm calling the paradox of parental influence.
This was my favorite part of the whole analysis. It's the real so what of the piece.
Okay, so the source argues that Valerie's faith influenced Naomi because it gave her the strength to leave. Explain that logic to me because it sounds like a riddle.
It's all about the nature of conviction. Naomi grew up watching her mother, Valerie, make incredibly hard choices for her faith. Valerie didn't just talk about it. She lived it.
Yeah.
She faced stigma. She gave up her time. She was willing to be unpopular for what she believed.
She walked the walk.
She was authentic. So Naomi saw firsthand what true 100% belief looks like. It looks like sacrifice. It looks like integrity.
Okay.
So when Naomi got older and looked at her own relationship with the faith, she had this incredibly high bar for comparison. She knew what real belief felt like because she'd seen it in her mom every single day.
And she realized she didn't have it.
She didn't feel that. She couldn't fake it.
Right.
If her mother had been, you know, a lukewarm believer, preaching one thing and doing another, Naomi might have just stayed out of habit. It would have been easy to go through the motions.
But because her mother was so intense about it.
Naomi had to be honest with herself. Mm. Her mother taught her to have the courage of her convictions. It just turned out that Naomi's convictions were different from her mom's.
That is. That's heavy.
It really is.
It reframes the whole idea of rebellion. We usually see it as disrespect. But in this light, Naomi leaving was actually the ultimate form of respect for her mother's character.
Exactly. She was using the courage her mother taught her to leave the path her mother wanted for her.
It's the risk of good parenting, isn't it? If you raise a child to be strong and independent and honest, eventually they're going to use those traits to make decisions you don't agree with.
You can't raise a lion and then expect it to act like a house cat.
And Valerie raised a lion.
She certainly did. And credit to her, the source implies they have a very close relationship today. She eventually accepted it.
So we've gone from the doorstep in London to the runways of Milan. We've seen how the armor of faith became the armor of a fashion icon. What's the takeaway here for the listener? I mean, most of us aren't supermodels.
I think the takeaway is about auditing your inheritance.
Auditing your inheritance. I like that phrase. What do you mean?
We all grow up with a script that our parents give us. It might be religious, political, just how to handle money, how to handle emotions.
Sure. This is how our family does things.
Exactly. And we tend to think our only options are to follow that script blindly or just burn the whole thing down and run away.
The binary choice, compliance or rebellion.
Right. But what Naomi's story suggests is there's a third way. You can edit the script. You can look at your upbringing and say, okay, I'm going to keep the discipline. I'm going to keep the resilience. I'm going to keep the integrity. But I am going to discard the doctrine that doesn't serve me. I'm going to discard the fear.
So you don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
No. You can take the skills you learned in the kingdom hall of your childhood, whatever that was for you, and apply them to your own runway. Nothing is wasted.
Yeah.
Even the hard parts, the restrictive parts, they gave you muscles you're probably using today.
That's a comforting thought. It means we aren't defined by where we started, but we are equipped by it.
Absolutely. We are the sum of those experiences, but we get to be the editors of our own story.
I want to leave everyone with one final thought to mull over. We spend so much time worrying about passing on the right beliefs. We want our kids or the people we lead to see the world exactly as we do. But maybe looking at Valerie and Naomi, that's the wrong goal. Maybe the greatest spiritual lesson isn't a specific set of rules. Maybe it's just the courage to live authentically. Because if you teach someone that, they might walk a path that terrifies you, but they will walk it with the integrity you gave them.
And really, what more can you ask for?
Exactly. Thanks for diving deep with us today.
See you next time.